I don't know why you came tonight or this week, but I want to commend you for coming into what we may call the uncertain and the unexplainable, because I'm sure that some of you have come to that. You weren't certain why you've come, and you still aren't, but you're beginning to catch on. You're not certain what God's going to say, but you're beginning to listen. And you're not certain as to how you're going to respond to it, but you're beginning to think you may be willing. So you've come to the uncertain. You've also come to the unexplainable. When somebody like, I believe it was Rhonda, was it, that gave that testimony? Was it Rhonda? Rhonda? You wonder what takes place in the life when we come just for about 2 days, and God does something that so drastically, radically, and properly changes the life. It's an exciting thing to have ladies like you who are willing to come into the face of the uncertain and the unexplainable and have a mind and a heart that is willing to say to God, God, you speak and I'm listening, and I maybe have come through a time when I wasn't willing to listen, but if you're willing to speak tonight, I am willing to listen, and I'm willing to see what you may have beyond what I've been able to figure. I want to just share a little part of my personal testimony, and it goes back to that very idea of something that God did in my life at a place similar to this. And it was back when I was a young single man as a student at the University of South Carolina. And I was attending a conference center where the Bible was always faithfully taught, Christ was always faithfully exalted. I was a young man studying in the College of Business Administration at the University of South Carolina. I pretty well had my life mapped out. My objectives were fairly set, and my abilities were being proven and further trained to make sure that when I got into what I was planning, I could do a real good job of it. And one day I was standing on the front porch of a large conference center on the other end of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and I was looking out over those Blue Ridge Mountains, and there was just range after range after range after range. And this story does have a meaning to it. And I was standing on that porch looking out over all those mountain ranges, and a godly woman, whom I think I had only met one time earlier that week, walked up beside me, behind me, and put her right hand on my left shoulder and said, Bob, I know what you're thinking. And I didn't know what kind of a woman I had encountered that could come up and tell me that. And I said, oh, really? Would you mind telling me what I'm thinking? And she said, no, I'd be glad to. And she said, you are standing there as a young man with a life that hungers for God, and you are looking out over those mountain ranges, and you are wondering what God has for you over each hill of life. And I turned to her and I said, Ms. Manning, that's not what I was thinking. But then I said, that is such a nice thought. I think that's what I'm going to start thinking right now. And you know, that's what I did start thinking. And I want to tell you this, that's been about 43 years ago, I think, and God has been faithful over every hill. He's been faithful through every valley, but not just faithful, absolutely exciting, thrilling. Teaching, leading, guiding, protecting. I never did become that businessman that I'd planned to be. God took me over one hill and showed me another direction of life for which I'm thrilled. Now, the reason I tell the story is this. I want to just plant in your mind tonight that our God is very capable of going over those hills and through those valleys with each of you. And He's very capable of knowing how to handle each hill and each valley a whole lot better than all of us combined could handle them just for one life, not to mention all of our lives. And I want to leave with you tonight a little challenge of just letting God take you through the next steps of life and us come to this moment tonight, the moment that some of us may call uncertain and unexplainable, and then just ask God, God, what is it that you want to do? What is it you want to change? What is it you want to break down? What is it you want to build up? What is it that you want to deal with in my life? And you go ahead and deal with it. And so with that, I've been praying along with Harold and Debbie and all of the others who have been part of the preparation for this time about some of the things I was going to share with you. I want to tell you a little bit about where I'm going. I'm privileged to speak or teach or do whatever I'm doing right now. You can call it whatever you'd like, but I'm privileged to have this time four times. Tonight I want to talk with you a little bit about claiming holy ground. You'll open in your Bible, Exodus 3. We're going to get to it in a minute. Tomorrow morning, I want to talk with you a little bit about this matter of facing tomorrow's headache with yesterday's burdens. And we'll see it from the life of a man of God who had rebelled against God. And then tomorrow night, I want to just share with you a little bit about God's specific concern about our specific sin. That may be a little uncomfortable, but I think it, by the time it's over, it would get to be a good thing. And then Saturday morning, I'd like to share with you from Romans chapter 6 this question and look for some answers, and that is, am I really, really dead to sin? So those are coming up. I will alert you to the fact that God has a right to change his mind and mine, and so those may not hold true. Tonight, in Exodus chapter 3, the question, the matter of claiming holy ground. Follow in your Bible as I read verses 1 through 6 from Exodus, the third chapter. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert, and he came to the mountain of God, even to Oreb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside, and I'll see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the middle of the bush, and he said, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here am I. And then God said in verse 5, do not draw closer, draw not nigh hither. Put off your shoes from off your feet, for the place whereon you stand is holy ground. I'm going to read another verse, but I want to stop at that one and say, tonight I shall study with you this whole biblical matter of claiming holy ground. Now verse 6. Moreover, God said, I am the God of your father. I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Claiming holy ground. Why? Let me just share one little statement out of the book of Proverbs. For those of you who want to look at it later, it's Proverbs 9:10. It's only going to be half of the verse that I share, but I want you to listen to it very carefully. The Bible says, and says it specifically and clearly, and illustrates it over and over again from beginning to the end of the Bible, this: the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The knowledge of the holy is understanding. I don't know about you, but every now and then I run into some people that don't have any understanding. I run into some situations where there's been no understanding applied. I run into incidents in my own life when I turn to God and I say, God, I need some understanding. And God's answer to me is this, in all of these situations is this: Bob Alderman, the knowledge of the holy is understanding. But I turn to God and I say, God, I don't want that kind of Sunday school talk. I want some kind of good academic, intellectual, up-to-date, psychiatric explanation of all these things I don't have. And God says, Bob, listen to me carefully. It's the knowledge of the holy that is understanding. What I hope to present to you tonight is a very clear process in biblical terms as to how you and I claim holy ground for our personal living. Let's just run through a few certain things about our lives today. There is no understanding in life or of life without a knowledge of the holy. Let me say that again. It doesn't matter how secular or how pagan this nation becomes, or how much your family becomes pagan, or how much you and I become pagan. It doesn't matter how much intellectual power we bring to an understanding of the mess we're in today. We will never have understanding until we have a knowledge of the Holy. You can line Cambridge and Yale and Harvard and Oxford and all of these others up. You can read all the books that have ever been written about all of the aspects of everything that tickles the mind of men and women alike. And you can have it all at the fingertip of your memory. And if you have no knowledge of the Holy, you will have no understanding of life. And I want you to think for a minute with me by the fact that that may be today why we are spending more money trying to understand ourselves than we've ever spent in the history of a nation, of all of human history, and we are understanding ourselves less and less than we ever have. We're writing more books about understanding ourselves. We're appointing more commissions and spending more millions of dollars trying to figure out what's going wrong in life. And all the time, God says with a simple word, I want to tell you something. You'll never have understanding again in America, in America's family, in America's church. You'll never have understanding again in your life until you have a knowledge of the Holy. How do we get back to that? When a nation forfeits a knowledge of the Holy, it forfeits its understanding of what makes life work in a nation. When a family forfeits a knowledge of the Holy, it forfeits the understanding of how a family is to work. It loses the concept of proper spousal love, parental honor, and disciplined children. We lose all of that. And that's one of the reasons today why when the knowledge of the Holy went down in our family, the problems of the family multiplied. And it's like a scale. If you go down on one side, you're going to go up on the other. And in the family life today, where the knowledge of the Holy was excused from the family life, the parental problems began to come in. And men deserted their mates, and women deserted their husbands, and parents deserted their children, and children deserted their parents. Not because we're living in times that are unusual, but because we're living in times that are unholy. When a church turns its back on the knowledge of the Holy, it'll begin to look for every other kind of thing to fascinate people, to maintain an institutional congregation. And that's one of the reasons why we've got so many ballistic-type churches today, trying to do everything they can to explain everything they can't understand, and trying like crazy to build institutions instead of individuals and an understanding of the holiness of God. It's not popular today to be holy. It's not easy today to think holy. Everywhere we turn in our society, there's an advertisement from hell that says, be unholy. I don't want to sound critical unless I should, but my wife and I were in a church building somewhere that's not one that would be here, picked up a little card advertising something that was coming up at that church not long after that. They were advertising a swing band that they were going to use for worship. And the first adjectival phrase, I don't know if you English teachers will agree with an adjectival phrase, but the first adjectival phrase said of this worship swing band that it was a good bit funky. I don't even know what that means. I hope it's, I hope I didn't use a bad word in your presence. I feel a whole lot more comfortable if all of you were men right now, but I... Do you think we need to claim holy ground again? Let me share with you. And I've got time to do it. 10 ways to claim holy ground. Number one, Claiming holy ground is not dependent upon our position in life. Exodus chapter 3 and verse 1. All of these 10 will be right out of these 6 verses of Exodus 3. Claiming holy ground is not dependent upon our position in life. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. Super saint, isn't he? Real big power mover in the world today. Here is a man out in a desert following a bunch of stinking animals that don't even belong to him, and God decides, that's the guy I'm going to bring into holy ground. Now, some of you are probably feeling like little people. I'm not the kind of individual that God would dare give a challenge to enter holy ground. I'm just a struggling young daughter or a young married wife, or I am a wife whose family has not been functioning right, and I'm not the kind of person that God could touch in a time like this and call me to holy ground. And I want you to remember this. And Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father. He didn't even own his own animals he was having to follow around. Claiming holy ground is not dependent upon your position in life. Claiming holy ground is not dependent upon your attitude about how far down the scale you have fallen since you used to be better than you are now. Moses one time lived in the bedroom of Pharaoh's palace in Egypt. Moses at one time had more authority in the flick of his little finger than a lot of men had at the head of a column of a mighty army. Moses never had to wonder about where the next bucket of gold, or silver, or groceries were coming from. His clothing was always immaculate. His bed was always made. His bath was always prepared. His riches were always at his fingertips. He was a favored son in Pharaoh's court. Now, if you fall from a position like that to having to follow somebody else's stinking animals out into the backside of a desert, you begin to feel a little bit small in life, and you begin to think that God, if there is a God, may have turned his back on you, and there is absolutely no way for you to climb back to God or for God to have anything to do with you. You have really messed up in life. And I've been around enough people in enough places like this to realize that there's probably a good percentage of you ladies that feel like I have messed up in my life so much, I doubt if God even could do a whole lot for me. But I want to remind you of this, that the first thing we studied tonight on claiming holy ground is that claiming holy ground is not dependent upon your present position or the place from which you may have fallen when you thought you were in a more favored place with God, husbands, children, or parents. For claiming holy ground, God meets us at the place where we are. In Moses' case, it happened to be following a bunch of stinking animals around the backside of a desert, and the animals didn't even belong to him. And we need to keep in mind that holy ground is not reserved for those who are in the courts of the super spiritual. For God can meet with us tonight and meet with some of you who think you have already fallen below the cellar of human experience. That's claiming holy ground, step one. Mark it down. Some of you are keeping notes. You may want to go back and look at it later. Claiming holy ground is not dependent upon our position in life. I have a tendency to look at a man like Harold Vaughan and people like that and say, these are the kind of people that God has prepared for these kind of encounters in life. And God's going to honor them. And I've been around some of these men and women in life who just seem to shine as the brightness of heaven. And I just thought, God could never do that in my life. But I want to tell you, claiming holy ground is not dependent upon our position in life. God does not look on this earth at a bunch of people whom he calls super saints and says, I'll bless him and her and not you and them. But God is available to call each of us out of that experience that he called Moses from. Number two, claiming holy ground is enhanced by our separation from the distractions of life. Let me say it again while you're writing it. Claiming holy ground is enhanced by our separation from the distractions of life. Exodus 3, verse 1. He led the flock to the backside of the desert. I think it's a great thing that we get away to a place like this. I've overheard some of you ladies talking already. It's sure great not to be mama tonight. Even in the testimony Rhonda gave, she was just thrilled to death that she had, I don't know whether she was thrilled about leaving the husband, but she seemed a little excited about leaving the laundry. Did you notice that? There are a lot of the rest of you that are just thrilled about some of the things you've left behind for two nights and 3 days. And it's good for us to come aside at a place like this. Think of this. You don't have the laundry. You don't have the cleaning. You don't have the kids. You don't have the diapers. You don't have your schedule. You don't have soccer games to go to and music. You don't have any of that. I mean, we've just come aside. And I don't think it's any accident that God happened to speak to Moses about claiming holy ground when Moses was separated from all of those things like that. He was on the backside of the desert. But I want to tell you this. Some of you are thinking that because you are not at home where you attempted to watch the evening television and read the morning paper and try to meditate on next week's soap operas and you don't have the laundry, the cleaning, or whatever, that just because you have separated yourself physically from that, that's all you need to do. And if God wants to speak to you, He will. But I want to tell you this. Some of you got away from the physical aspect of the distraction, but you brought those distractions with you in your mind and in your heart. Some of you are still being distracted by attitudes toward husbands, children, parents, in-laws, the bad hand that you've been dealt while your husband plays golf, you change diapers, and you've got it. And we need to admit it. And I don't know who you are, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands to tell me who you are. But claiming holy ground is enhanced by your separation from the distractions of life. Now, the reason I bring that up is to ask you this, because you're going to ask me this. Okay, Bob, I'm up here. I've left all of those other things. I've come to the mountaintop. I've gathered with friends who supposedly are here to seek God also, and I want to know how I can seek God. What can I do about these distractions that followed me because they're in my mind and they're in my heart? And there's envy and anger and jealousy and pride and lust and greed and all of those things. And there's unforgiven things that I've done and there are broken relationships that I still have. What may I do right now? Claiming holy ground is enhanced by our separation from the distractions of life. You left some of them back home, but tonight in your prayer time, or even right now, you need to get separated from those that you brought in your mind and in your heart. You know what I mean? Happens to me all the time. And we've got to be honest with ourselves. God, I did get away from the things that are nasty in my schedule, but You know what is in my soul. Getting to the backside of the desert only gets rid of some of them. But God, in His good, great mercy and grace to all of us, says, let's get personal, let's get one-on-one, let's get rid of the rest of the distractions of life. Maybe that's why the Bible says and says clearly, no man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this world. And if you are going to win the battle that is yours for eternity, you need to make sure that the mountaintop deals with the external distractions as well as the internal. Number three, claiming holy ground is dependent upon our willingness to come like we are to where God is. Let me say that one again. Claiming holy ground is dependent upon our willingness to come like we are to where God is. Now that you've written that, look back in verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, And he led the flock to the backside of the desert. Now the next little phrase, and he came to the mountain of God. Now what some of us are thinking tonight already after those first two points about claiming holy ground is this. God, I'm willing to meet you after I get home and straighten up everything I possibly can. God, I can't go further with you tonight because there are things at home with which I have to deal. Can you imagine this conversation going on with Moses following Jethro's flock in the backside of the desert, looking over and seeing the mountain of God, and Moses saying, God, I'd really like to go over to the mountain and have a visit with you, but my clothes are dirty. My skin stinks. And you know, Harold, I know you ask the women not to wear perfume, but you know, you really put yourself that by the end of this conference, if you have to come back and ask them to put some on, you would really be in trouble, you know. Oh, it was Debbie. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, ladies, but just... But here's Moses out here on the backside of this desert, and he's got to have a terrible case of aromatizing like the animals, you know. And he's really not dressed up for a worship service. And I doubt seriously if his attitude is all of that positive. I mean, after all, when you take a man that's been eating out of the golden plates of Pharaoh's banquet hall, and now all he's doing is following around his father-in-law's animals, I would think his attitude must be terrible. And so Moses says to God, God, I know that's your mountain. I'd really like to meet with you. But God, before I do, I really need to go back, take a bath, change clothes, and attend at least 1 week of Dale Carnegie's sessions. You know, claiming holy ground means this, friend. That I am willing to come like I am to where God is without delay. Without having to go home and say to my husband, husband, what would you think if I decided to come clean with God? What would you think if I decided in this family as your wife and as your children's mother that I started claiming holy territory? Claiming holy territory means you claim holy territory and then go back off the mountain. For many of us, it may be a terrifying thing even to think of approaching God's mountain. And I have talked to some of you. I haven't gotten to talk to you women like I do the men because I see them more often and they talk a little bit more freely to me. Some of them come to these prayer advances with fear and trembling. And I'm not a keen observer of people. I'm just a sort of slightly keen observer of people. But I think I've looked into some of your eyes already today and seen something like this just emanating out of it. What in the world have I gotten myself into? Who are these people? Where did that crowd hatch? I go to a church, but they aren't like this bunch. We need to contemplate what God will say and what He will think and how we will act, how He will act. And when we come into a place like this, we aren't all that sure about the whole thing. I remember a few years ago, I brought my brother-in-law up. My brother-in-law is a retired executive from one of the international companies down in South Carolina, and he was raised in a church that never told him the gospel. And he visited our church over in Roanoke and got saved, and then he heard about a prayer advance and he wanted to attend, and he came up, and man, I mean, the first night he was up here, he just got immersed into radicalism for God. And we were over there in one of the little lodges, and the men of the church were gathered around and praying, and my brother-in-law sat, and then we came out, he said, man, I have never heard that kind of praying in my life. And then he came to me and he said, Bob, would you teach me how to pray? And I thought, he doesn't know the difference between me and Jesus yet. But he said, you need to teach me how to pray. He said, He said, when I start praying, my repertoire runs out in 30 seconds. He didn't know what he'd gotten into. But you know he was willing. Raised in a very liberal church. Never been around people that prayed other than reading prayers out of a prayer book that was written a long time ago by people he didn't even know. Claiming holy ground is dependent upon our willingness, though, to come like we are to where God is. Some of us have come to this point in life with fear and trembling and uncertainty, and we are not sure about approaching the mountain. May I just tell you this? Have no fear. If God begins to stir in your mind and your heart tonight and calls you unto His mountain to approach Him like you are, without any other changes, you go to that mountain tonight and get ready to claim holy ground. Why do you think God put this little story in this book but for us to know how to approach His mountain and His holiness? Number four, claiming holy ground is often dependent upon our willingness to come like we are to where God is. Now, that's not the same point I just made. That's just the first half of this one, all right? Claiming holy ground is often dependent upon our willingness to come like we are to where God is. Now, listen to this one carefully. And where there is not likely to be anything but God. Did you get it? I go through it again then. Claiming holy ground is often dependent upon our willingness to come like we are to where God is, hyphen, and where there is not likely to be anything else but God. I want you to look back in Exodus 3 and verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and led the flock to the backside of the desert, and he came to the mountain of God. Now watch this little two-word phrase, to Oreb. Now listen carefully. It's a powerful message in those two little words that contradict today's attitude toward God, church, Christ, Christianity, Bible, faith, and other Christians. To Oreb means there's nothing else there but God. The word Oreb means this: desert. Nothing. No beautiful flowers, no green trees, no McDonald's, no exercise gymnasiums, no computers, no television, no civilization, nothing. Just God. Many of us are being deceived today by churches who bait hooks in order to win pagans. Many of us today, even after conversion, are so deceived by a lot of what's going on, we don't have any idea that God would even expect us to approach Him unless He had bait on the hook also. It seemingly has gone out of the question that anybody would come to God because He's God. If God doesn't offer me all of the other things that I can get down the street, why should I go to God? Some of you probably think, if God will give me peace, I will go to God. God will give you peace. But I'll tell you this, you'll never have peace until you're willing to go to God because He's God. And when God called Moses to Oreb, He said, Moses, come over to this place. I'm the only one and the only thing and the only attraction and the only enticement. And Moses, it will just be you and me and no toys, no tricks, and no treasures. You just come and let it be you and me. Claiming holy ground not only means our willingness to come to God where He is like we are, but it means that we're willing to come to God when God is the only thing or one to whom we are coming. Now let's be honest. How many of you are attracted to your Christian commitment because what is in it for you appeals to you on a fleshly, human, social, cultural level instead of the absolute holy nature of God. Do you understand? Do you understand where we are in what we call American Christianity today? That it is an absolute absurd thing to think that there would ever be a church today that wants me to be a part of the family of God when they don't have the music I want, the dinners I want, the clubs I want, the programs I want, the people I want, the style I want, the color, the paint, and the nursery I want. Why should I be a part of Christianity if they don't have all of those things I want? And that's why there's no understanding today, because we've forgotten the idea that we could come to God because He's God. And that's why when God did this in Moses' life, God didn't sit back on the banks of the Nile right across from Pharaoh's palace and said, "Moses, come, I can get you back into the courtroom." He called him up to the mountain where the very name of the mountain meant nothing. Nothing but God. The faithful Jew put it this way: "And God is my salvation, my glory, the rock of my strength, my refuge is in God." Not in all the trimmings, not in all the tricks, not in all the toys, not in all the treasures. This is just in God. It is a frightening thing to think for some people that that would be my attraction. As long as you are looking for a God with toys and tricks and treasures, as long as I'm looking for that, as long as our pastors are looking for that, as long as our church growth people are looking for that, as long as the program planners of the prospering local congregation are looking for that, we will find the toys and the tricks and the treasures, but we will not find holy ground again. Number five, claiming holy ground means that we are willing to be approached by a messenger of God. Now this one is going to sting a little bit. It's in verse 2. "And an angel of the Lord appeared to Moses in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush." The angel of the Lord appeared to Moses in a flame of fire out of the middle of a burning bush. How do you think the church would grow today if we sent angels out of flaming fire bushes to do our house calling for the people who were looking for a comfortable church? But God had Moses' attention, and He dispatched an angel of fire. Let me just share with you a few things about fire. I speak with a South Carolina accent, so let me spell that word for you first. It's F-I-R-E. You know the thing. Fire. One of the first things it does is it purifies the impure. You know the process. And God dispatched to Moses some angel not equipped with a trumpet. I like angels with trumpets, don't you? Flowing veils, flapping wings, trumpets that are made of pure silver. I'm sitting over there and saying, "God, why that angel? I want that one." This one with fire, looks sort of uncomfortable. Take him away. Send me the one that does the hallelujah course on his silver trumpet. And that's where most of us are. That's where I've been many, many times. "God, I don't mind certain angels. But there are certain angels that I not only mind, I despise, and I don't want them messing up my life." Why do you send one with fire? Because fire purifies the impure. And God knows that if I'm going to enjoy the angel with the golden trumpet, I've got to first encounter the angel with the flaming torch. He's got to do a work of purification in my life. Fire not only purifies the impure, it changes the usefulness of things. Have you ever noticed that fire does that? It changes the usefulness of things. Some of us have come to times in life when we've just said to God, God, I want to be useful. And God says, oh, really? Say, yeah, God, I'm serious. I want to be useful. And God says, do you know what I use to change the usefulness of things and people? Well, sure, God, you fix up my personality. You pay my bills to go off to a finishing seminary school. So God says, no, that's not how I change the usefulness of things. And then I say to God, what do you have in mind? And God says, well, the best thing I've found to change the usefulness of things is fire. You ever notice how fire could take a field of wheat and change it into a scorched earth, or a bushel of wheat and change it into a nice loaf of warm bread? Fire changes the usefulness of things. Have you ever noticed how a fire can change a family house into ashes and ruined waste, or it can warm a family's house with comfort and beauty? Fire changes the usefulness of things. And if you really want to be useful to God and to anybody else, and you come to God and said, God, I want to be useful, don't run when God pulls out the angel of fire to dispatch to your life, to burn, to change. Fire also destroys. It destroys appearance. Some of us may like the way we are and like the way we look and like the way our house sits on the lot and like the way the people ride by and see. Fire changes our appearance. We may like the appearance that we have at our local clubs and our social outings and our walks through the mall, and we may like the way that we're able to dress with finery and fashion and all of that. And don't get me wrong, ladies, I don't want you to leave here and say, God taught me to be ugly. That's not what I'm talking about. But fire changes the appearance of things. And I've seen God take fire to people's lives who just transform their outward appearance. The way they looked at themselves in the mirror, the way they dressed, the way they walked, the way they approached people. I don't think it's any secret that there's a young girl in our church who, when I first saw her, I looked at her and I had seen a lot of strange sights in my life. But I don't think I'd ever seen one as strange as that young girl. And God visited that young girl with a kind of a changing spirit. And we began to see the weirdness just peel off. And the beauty of God began to shine through. Don't be surprised if God wants to bring fire to your life as you claim holy ground. He's going to bring fire that destroys appearances, and it destroys other things too, and I won't mention all of those. You can add to that list. But there's another thing that fire does. Not only does it purify the impure and change the usefulness of things and destroy, fire also reveals. Fire tests the nature of a thing and the nature of a person. That's why the Bible says about the judgment that we Christians will have, that it will be a judgment that tests the works we do, whether they be wood, hay, or stubble, or gold, silver, and precious stone. Fire destroys and fire reveals. If we're going to claim holy ground, and God was getting Moses ready to claim it, and God said, before we let Moses claim holy ground, let's let him be revealed for his heart. Number six, claiming holy ground means that we're willing to approach both the uncertain and the unexplainable. And that's one of the things that I used to introduce our time tonight, that some of you have come to this mountain and to this prayer advance and to this gathering of particular people, this group of what some of you have already looked at and said, you are fanatical beyond measure, but you are willing to come and approach the uncertain and the unexplainable. Look in verse 2, and here's what we read. The angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush, and he looked, And behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I'll now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. And let me just put it to you in a very simple way, friends. That simply means that for Moses to get ready to claim the holy is the same thing you and I need to listen. I'm willing to learn. And that's where we must be tonight. I can imagine in a group like this, some of you, and I say this out of personal indictment against myself, but I can imagine in a group like this that some of you have already had the thought cross your mind. You came in a van with seven other ladies, and you've already had the thought cross your mind. You're going to a telephone tonight, and you're going to call honey back home and say, honey, I know it's 350 miles, but I'm ready to leave. Come and get me. I don't know. I hope not. But getting into holy ground territory means that you're, some of you at least, and the rest of you have already been there, so now you're not all that frightened. You've already been to that bush. But some of you are in it for the first time. And you're feeling a little shaken, a little unstable. When a man moves toward God, he must do so with abandon to all that God is and to all that God will do. And if you can't move toward God that way, you're on a dead-end street and your path of retreat is closed. Are you willing to come to the uncertain, saying, God, I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do in the prayer meeting tonight. I don't know what you're going to do during the nighttime. I don't know what you're going to do around the dinner table or in the morning devotion hours. I don't know what you're going to do in the sessions tomorrow. I don't know what you're going to do, but God, if you're in it, I'm willing. And even though this whole matter of brokenness, this whole matter of absolute and total allegiance to God that Paul has shared with us this afternoon, this whole matter of saying that even though I've been in Pharaoh's palace, I am more attracted to ground that is holy. And you're willing to take that step. But many of us will try to avoid the holy ground because we don't know what it will mean to us. And some will try to avoid it because we don't know what it'll mean to our children. And if we capture holy ground in these few days, we don't know how to explain to our children why you have been changed from the inside out. And you may run from it. Number seven. Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to go one-on-one with God. Look at that little phrase in verse 4, if you will. And when the Lord saw that Moses turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the middle of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. If I had been Moses, this is a confession of sinful ways. If I had been Moses, you know what I'd have said then? I would have said, what's this Moses business? Don't you know Ralph and Harry and Frank? Why just me? I was the oldest son in my, I was the oldest child in my father's family. I was also the smartest and I was the only one in the family that knew how to do anything. And let me tell you how I knew that. Every time something needed to be done. Robert! I remember, as much as I loved and honored my parents, I remembered standing in the backyard one day and shouting back, Robert! Robert! Is that the only one of your children you know by name? Now, I don't do that anymore, and I don't recommend that you do it, but I want to tell you, that's where Moses was. I tell you, it's an uncomfortable position when it seems like your name is the only one God knows. But claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to go one-on-one with Moses. Let me tell you what that means in practical application tonight. That means that some of you are willing to go one-on-one with God and claim holy ground regardless of what the other ladies that came in your van are willing to do. But it also means that some of you aren't quite certain, and you're going to be looking around and snooping around and asking a few outside of the arena questions to find out, is anybody else willing to do this before I make up my decision? You know what I mean? Moses, Margaret, Sally, God, don't you know anybody else's name other than mine? One-on-one. And that's where it is. Now you're going to meet for prayer groups tonight. And some of you are going to have a tendency to feel each other out. And some of you may even be thinking, I wonder if there's going to be a consensus in our group as to whether or not we all ought to claim holy ground. And that won't do it, friends. Even though you're in a group, it may well be that you need to get out of the group and find a quiet place where God calls and you hear only one name, and that's yours. You get it? Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to go one-on-one with Moses. Excuse me, with God. I don't know what kind of slip that was. Nobody else. Just God calling you by name and you answering with the singular personal pronoun. You know, we don't like to use that anymore today. As long as we're thinking about achievement, it's I, but when we're thinking about responsibility, it's us. Me and my crowd, take a poll, find out where the wind's blowing, but tonight when God calls you by name, you've got one word, and it's the shortest word in the English language. It is this: I. That's who God is speaking to. No consulting of the archives to see what happened to others who went one-on-one with God. The issue is not whether God's speaking to anyone else. The issue is whether God's speaking to you. And that settles it. Number 8. Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to obey the limitations of God. Verse 5. And God said, draw not nigh hither. Powerful statement. Let me mention to you what it means today. God has the right to draw a line and tell you and me not to cross it. Today, if God does that, he gets called a legalist, narrow-minded, idiotic, religious, fanatic. Anytime we speak about a God today who has rules, we rule him out. God never has forfeited not only his right, but his responsibility to draw a line and tell us not to cross it. And if I'm going to claim holy ground, God has got a right to protect the ground that is holy and protect me from the ground that is not holy. And God has a royal decree of love for his children in drawing the line. Unfortunately, in American religiosity today, drawing a line over which we cannot cross is ridiculed from many, many pulpits in our land. The idea that I would say to my son, no, you can't, or to my daughter, no, you can't, that's an absurd idea today. There will be a day in some of your lifetime, if not already, that we will have a government in our land that will arrest you for child abuse if you refrain your children from the sodomite ways of this country. Are you ready to claim holy ground by honoring a God who reserves the responsibility to draw a line? And may I go a bit further? Are you, as a parent or as a young lady or an older grandmother or whatever status of life you're in, are you willing, first of all, to draw the line or let God draw the line for your own life? Or do you know that even while you are at a prayer advance like this, that there are things in your life that are across the the line that God has drawn, and you've not even dealt with those yet. Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to obey the limitations of God. Number 9, claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to honor by action the holiness of God. For God said it in verse 5, Moses, put off your shoes from off your feet. We come back and say, God, why that? That doesn't make sense. This is tough ground out here. There are rocks. There are all kinds of things that could puncture my skin. God, let's be reasonable about this. God says, no, you put your shoes off. This is ground. And I want you to do something outward to show something inward. And the problem today is that we've forfeited all aspects that honoring the holiness of God by some things that God wants us to do and certain things that He does not want us to do. That's out of the question now. But I want to tell you, it hasn't been ruled out by God. Claiming holy ground still means that we recognize God's responsibility to draw the line and our responsibility to respond by an outward physical action. And God has never changed that. And if God says, we are in holy territory, your shoes come off, then our shoes come off. It is the emasculating of God's holy standards in America that has caused even the church, not just to mention the White House, to lose all standards of proper response to that which is holy. And I know that some of us are greatly concerned about what's going on in other places, but that's not why we're here tonight. We're here tonight because we need to be concerned about what's going on in my place. Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to honor by action the holiness of God. And let me just throw out a couple of things about that. When God says His day is holy, how do we honor it? I've seen professing Christian people fall to the obnoxious element of sin when somebody who wants their kids to play soccer on Sunday, the parents who formerly had been in Sunday school and church services, say, well, we can't be there this Sunday. My kid has a soccer game. You'll never claim holy ground, friend. And without that holy ground, when you try to teach your morals to your kids or God's morals to your kids a little later, they're going to laugh. They're going to laugh. Mama, I remember when God told you to keep His day holy, but you let me play soccer. Who do you think you're fooling? Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to let God demand of me something that is unusual. Even taking shoes off in a hard rock, hot desert place. One final thing. Claiming holy ground means that I'm willing to affirm my encounter with the God of history. Verse 6, if you will. Moreover, He said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. I want you to get this. Some of you have read that little phrase over and over and over again, and it's basically without meaning as you fast forward through it. But when God says this, Moses, I am the God of your father, Abraham, the God of your father, Isaac, the God of your father, Jacob. God was saying to Moses, Moses, I am the God of history. I am the God of eternity past. I am the God of the present now, and I am the God of the eternal future. And then God would say to Moses, and Moses, in all of my history, I've never changed my standard of holiness. I've not revised my code of behavior for the year 2000. That which was sinful before I created Adam is still sinful, and it will be sinful after I judge the last Adam. To claim holy ground, my friends, means that we are willing to encounter the God of history. Not the God of this age. Not the New Age God. Not the new kind of ideas that we have about God. The God of history. The God who said, you be holy, for I am holy. Would you bow and pray with me, please? Father, I want to thank you for the privilege of knowing the Holy. I want to thank you for the privilege of experiencing the Holy. I want to thank you for the joy of sensing the thrill of the Holy. And I want to thank you for the privilege of the protection of that which is holy. And I would pray tonight, Father, when we encounter the personal conflict of sin within us, that we will be willing to personally encounter your holiness provided for us. May tonight, all of us, may it be that each of us will be willing to get with you one on one, even while we're in a group praying, and have you call us to holiness. And yield our minds and our hearts to you. Deal with the personal. And I thank you for that. I'm going to ask that we just wait a minute or two in quietness for you to think through what we've shared tonight together. And then after a couple of minutes or so, I would ask one of the Vaughns to close our time together.